Good morning. This is Neil Strausser with the CBS World News Roundup. Murderer, murderer, the shouts in San Francisco as thousands of demonstrators protested, some violently. A jury's finding that former city supervisor Dan White was guilty of voluntary manslaughter, not first-degree murder, in the killings of Mayor George Moscone and Supervisor Harvey Milk, an avowed homosexual. The evidence showed that White, unhappy because Moscone refused to give him back the job he had resigned, shot the mayor four times, reloaded his gun, and shot Milk five times. But the jury agreed with defense testimony that he was suffering a mental collapse, a verdict that could see White a free man within 5 years. And that brought the protesters, many of them homosexuals themselves, to City Hall. Harold Dow reports.
The demonstrators shouted slogans protesting what they considered the injustice of the verdict. There were more than 4,000 of them. Tensions were high. They shouted and screamed and finally rioted, breaking windows in City Hall and surrounding buildings. They pounded on doors. They threw bricks and bottles and burned police cars. Hundreds of riot-equipped police officers began a counter-assault, forcing the demonstrators away from the front steps of City Hall. Some of the protesters were injured in the exchange. Blood could be seen on the heads and faces of some of them. But most of the injured were police officers hit with flying bricks or bottles. The streets in front of San Francisco City Hall looked like the aftermath of a war zone. But the most damaging result of last night's riot was not visible. The credibility of the gay community may have also been destroyed. Something that took years to establish, one police officer said, disappeared in a few hours. Harold Dow, CBS News, San Francisco.
A first-degree conviction for White could have meant a death penalty. In Florida, only the federal courts now stand between two convicts and the electric chair tomorrow, Bruce Hall reports.
John Spinkelink and Willie Darden have lost a series of last-minute appeals in state and federal courts, increasing the chances they will be executed Wednesday morning. They will make final appeals to the U.S. Supreme Court, but that court has already turned down Spinkelink four times. Death penalty opponents are continuing their around-the-clock vigil at the state capitol in Tallahassee, and demonstrators are scheduled to begin gathering later today at the Florida State Prison near Stark. Inside the prison, Spinkelink and Darden have been moved to cells near the electric chair. The prison superintendent says they are becoming apprehensive, but still believe they will get a stay of execution. But apparently, their only hope rests with the courts, as state officials say they will take no action to halt the executions. Bruce Hall, CBS News, at the Florida State Prison.
The executions, if carried out, would be the first in Florida since 1964, and the first in the U.S. since Gary Gilmore went before a firing squad in Utah in January 1977. In Canada, as in Britain a few weeks ago, it's the Liberals versus the Conservatives. But the feeling is the voters may give the balance of power to a small third party, the Socialist New Democrats, in today's parliamentary elections. Steve Young has more from Toronto.
Liberal Party leader Pierre Elliott Trudeau, in final campaign appearances, argued that Canada needs to gain full charge of its destiny and eliminate Britain's influence on Canadian constitutional affairs. One skeptic said the subject of constitutional patriation, as Trudeau calls it, is somewhat less important to most Canadians than Dutch elm disease. It left people wondering if Trudeau expects to lose and wants to go out on a lofty issue. Conservative candidate Joe Clark's aides feel confident that despite polls showing it's neck and neck, Clark will win at least a plurality of the seats in Parliament. Accordingly, Clark cut back the number of his appearances in the closing days of the campaign to avoid the possibility of any last-minute gaffe. Many people are going to the polls this morning unhappy with Trudeau, unsure about Clark, and worried by problems ranging from the survival of the country itself to soaring inflation and the sinking value of Canada's dollar. Canadians are expected to vote in a government controlling only a minority of the seats in Parliament, a government that would have a hard time dealing with those challenges in the months ahead. Steve Young, CBS News, Toronto.
In London, Secretary of State Vance continues his get-acquainted sessions with members of Britain's new Conservative government. Bob McNamara reports.
This afternoon, Vance has talks with Francis Pym. Pym, Prime Minister Margaret Thatcher's defense secretary. Vance is expected to brief Pym on the U.S. and Soviet Union's SALT II agreement, a pact which Britain has endorsed, but one that has caused some European military strategists to fear that Europe might be left vulnerable to medium-range Russian missiles. Last night, the Secretary of State hosted a private dinner for Prime Minister Margaret Thatcher and several other top officials of her government. Earlier in the day, after long talks with Foreign Secretary Lord Carrington, Vance won assurances from Carrington that Britain would not rush to recognize the new government in Rhodesia, nor would it immediately lift economic sanctions against the country. And the pledge, in effect, will give the White House the first chance to make any major shift in policy towards Rhodesia. Bob McNamara, CBS News, London.
Israel's Prime Minister Begin flew to London today for talks with Vance before he meets at the end of this week with Egyptian President Sadat. Begin, as he left Israel, disputing an Egyptian government statement that the Israeli-Egyptian border will remain closed even after the return this week of the Sinai desert town of El Arish. Begin saying the matter will be clarified when he meets with Sadat. And now the good news for once. It comes to us from Southern California and Terry Drinkwater in Los Angeles.
California, the place where it all began, may be experiencing the beginning of the end of the current gas crisis. Yesterday, the lines were appreciably shorter. And today, an even day in the allocation program, officials predict shorter waits, perhaps 15 minutes, and in some places, no waits at all. The reasons? Slightly less driving. Some fuel-conscious economical driving. Deliveries to big stations of a little bit more fuel as state emergency supplies are released to the public. Then, too, the refiners, anticipating the White House decision for more gas to California next month, are speeding up their deliveries now. Attendants report less topping off. There's a tendency for motorists to plan ahead now because more stations are posting their hours, though most all of the hours still remain limited. Newspaper, television, and radio stations aren't emphasizing the story as much. That also may have lessened the panic. But, said one editorialist this morning, we hope Californians have learned their lesson. The lines may be shorter, but the gas crisis isn't over. It never will be. Terry Drinkwater, CBS News, Los Angeles.
Elsewhere, there is still concern about supplies this coming holiday weekend. Those Ohio says most of its stations will be open in Ohio, and New York predicts tight but adequate supplies of gasoline. Today in Washington, more testimony about the finances of Senator Herman Talmadge before the Senate Ethics Committee from his former administrative aide, Daniel Minshew. Phil Jones reports.
Minshew was Talmadge's administrative assistant from 1971 through 74. He has already testified that Talmadge complained about the high cost of being a senator, and as a result, there was a discussion on how to increase available funds. One option, according to Minshew, was to open a secret bank account to handle the Senate funds and campaign contributions. And Minshew claims that Talmadge was aware of the decision to go ahead with a secret bank account. Talmadge claims he knew nothing about this and that he never benefited from any such account. Minshew has admitted taking some of the secret account money for his personal use, but he claims that he did not get all of it. Another issue is Talmadge's daily spending money. Talmadge claims he operated on $5 and $10 cash gifts from friends. But Minshew says that it was not unusual for Talmadge to have $100 bills in his pocket. Testimony is expected later from Talmadge's former wife about some $7,700 in $100 bills that she found in the senator's overcoat. Phil Jones, CBS News, Capitol Hill.
In Atlanta, Robert Shackney has observed activity suggesting a federal grand jury considering the banking activities of Burt Lance may soon decide whether to indict the former budget director and close friend of President Carter.
Federal agents were seen entering and leaving the grand jury room with computer records and other documents, and a further grand jury meeting is scheduled today. Lance has retained an attorney to represent him in a possible criminal case. The nature of the case against Lance is already on public record. A year ago, in a non-criminal proceeding, the Securities and Exchange Commission and the Comptroller of the Currency accused Lance of fraud and deceit for his activities as president of two Georgia banks, in his hometown of Calhoun and in Atlanta. Among the charges, that Lance improperly arranged loans for himself, his relatives, and his business associates. This grand jury will not deal with Lance's loans to the Carter family's peanut warehouse. That investigation has been taken over by an independent special counsel. Robert Shackney, CBS News, Atlanta.
Those boycotting Texas state senators still haven't been found, but even if they are, Lieutenant Governor William Hobby is conceding they probably have won their fight against a separate presidential primary they feel would benefit Republican John Connally and conservative Democrats. The bill, Hobby says, now seems dead in the state Senate.